This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Good morning, and thank you for joining me for The Scoop with Tanya Flanagan. I'm so happy you decided to wake up and start your day with me. Here on The Scoop, where we talk about life, joy, funny moments, trending topics, and so much more. We promise to keep you in the know and find out what you know. So, let's get started. Good morning, Las Vegas, and welcome to another issue or an edition of The Scoop with me, Tanya Flanagan, here on 91.5 KUNV, Jazz and More, Public Radio. So delighted that you got up this morning and decided to tune in and listen to the show. As you know, from time to time, if you've been here before, I like to do a Man on the Street segment. So this morning we're having one of those segments, a Man on the Street segment, and it's designed to introduce you to interesting people who live right here in the Valley with you that you might otherwise not have the opportunity to get to know. So this morning, I'd like to welcome to the show my friend and neighbor, John Taggart. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Thank you for getting up so early on a Sunday morning. I know it's beautiful. We're getting into that season of spring to enjoy the weather and the nice mornings, the beautiful sunrises. So I want to say thank you for grabbing a cup of coffee and hanging out with me.
No worries.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with me today, and for those who people know, some may know you, some may not, but the reason why I'm so excited to have you on is I've always been in awe. You recently retired, but I've always been in awe of your career. It just always seems so cool. Delighted to say you're my neighbor, and I would look him from time to time. You would be gone because you would be on tour with the phenomenal, the infamous, the world-renowned, the revered Stevie Nicks, Fleetwood Mac. And you were in the music industry. And so
I was.
How did that happen? How does a person end up doing that for a career? And how do you make it a career?
Well, quite frankly, it started in junior high school. I was lucky enough to have some friends that were in a band, and I just hung out with them and started getting into instrument repair. So they were always, you know, calling me, and that went on all the way through high school. And then I kind of got away from it for a few years and decided I was going to start a repair shop. And one thing led to another, and I had known this gentleman named Jerry Lopez, who was in a band called Santa Fe, still is, and he had a friend who was a manager of Bette Midler, and they were looking for a local guitar tech because she was looking for, she was doing a residency there at Caesars. And they gave me a call and asked if I was interested, and of course I said yes. And that led on to, I ended up doing the Cher residency there at Caesars as well. And Marty, Beth's manager, was also Stevie Nicks' manager. And he asked me if I wanted to go out and do a few gigs, makeup gigs, and I said yes. And one thing led to another, and I worked with Stevie for about a year, I think. And all of a sudden, Fleetwood Mac was looking for a guitar tech, and I just moved right into the position and stayed with Stevie the whole time. I've been with Stevie for 14 years now.
Wow.
And it worked out pretty smooth.
So
just in the right place at the right time, really.
It's just so cool. So when you say tech, you make sure everything is working. Do you ever, like, actually have to perform, too?
I did perform one time with Cher, but only on one song. But no, basically, I have my guitar player, Waddy Wattel. I'm responsible for his gear to make sure it gets off the truck, gets on stage, all up and running for the show, and gets back off stage and back into the truck.
So
we have loaders at every gig. Stevie normally travels with about around 40 people.
Wow.
Whether they're lighting, video, rigging, stuff like that. And then they have what they call backline, which is about four or five people that are in charge of each person in the band and their gear. So, yeah, it's the Stevie Nicks gig is like a dream gig, really. It's a great camp and just awesome, fun times.
That's just, I mean, it's so cool. You've traveled all over the world because you said you've worked with Stevie for like 14 years. So you've been a part of her her entertainment traveling family for over a decade.
Yes.
What's one of the most interesting cities or places you guys have you've ever traveled to support her?
Oh boy, that's a tough question. I really like England, although it's a tad expensive. I've been to Switzerland. That's a beautiful country. I love Amsterdam. All the waterways and the boats and the houseboats and Berlin. I mean, boy, there's so many places I've been to that each one of them has its own little quirk, whether it be food or the view. France, oh man, Cannes, France, great place. But a lot of times where it's a hit and run gig where you fly in and fly out, or you are fortunate enough to stay there for a few days and enjoy the sights. It all depends on what if she's doing a one-off, or Stevie does a lot of one-offs for lack of a better term, the rich and famous will do like backyard parties, which are like super fun, very low-keyed. I mean, normally we're doing a gig where there's like, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15,000 people. And, you know, when you're playing a backyard party where there's like 100 people, it's a blast.
That reminds me of when I used to hear the stories about Prince. And I don't know if you ever like just heard these stories being so close to the industry that he would just show up to places and play like these small clubs. Wherever he might be, and he would play like for hours.
That is true.
Is it anything like that? Is it because it makes me think of this really intimate concert setting where I mean I cannot imagine what it would be like to see Stevie Nicks with 100 people. It's like she's so close you could touch her from almost any spot in the room. I saw a Fleetwood Mac concert once. It was some years ago. It was a Memorial Day weekend here. And they were playing the MGM Grand Garden Arena. Phenomenal show. And when I used to work in gaming at the hotel, you'd walk the hallways of the management offices and all of the, they frame the pictures of the concerts that have taken place. And one of the billboards that's framed is Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks from one of the shows. And so it's just super cool to see all of the things that go into entertainment here. But to talk to you, to kind of get a feel for what goes on behind the scenes, how long does it take to really prepare? Because when you see the shows, the stages are elaborate. People emerge from underneath the stage or they drop down from the sky.
Well, it depends on what group or artist you're seeing on a typical Stevie show. If you're doing a TV show, say, like Good Morning America or Today, the call time is usually around 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And the show usually, the downbeat's usually about 6 o'clock in the morning. and you're out of there an hour and a half later. On a regular show day, like the rigging guys, they show up anywhere between 6 and 8 o'clock in the morning, and then the backline guys have the best gig, really, as far as I'm concerned. You're the last in and the first out. So we would typically show up anywhere between 9 and 11 o'clock in the morning.
So were you considered backline, or is that?
I'm considered backline, yes.
Okay, so your gig was like the better gig of all of it when you're getting a band situated to do a show.
Well, there's a trust me, when you have people hanging hundreds of things over your head, your trust is fully in them, because it's, you know, there's a lot of respect for those guys. They and there's a lot of responsibility for those guys as well. You know, you have all kinds of stuff hanging over your head for hours during the day, and you definitely don't want it coming down. But as far as the back line goes, it's a pretty smooth operation. I mean, you're basically just in charge of one person's band gear. You know, you have a drum tech and a keyboard tech, and there's a lot of joking and messing around during the day. But, you know, when it comes to showtime, it's serious. And, you know, during the day is when you want all the problems to occur. You definitely don't want them happening during the show.
Right.
Although it has happened.
What's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you while trying to...
A power outage at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow. Okay. So was it like, did the room go dark? Was it just like everybody...
No, just the band.
Just the band. So did she sing a cappella?
No, we didn't. We didn't do anything. We had to wait for them to get it back together. The problem was, is it happened like 2 or 3 times during the show. Very, very stressful, to say the least.
I can't even imagine.
Because, you know, your job is to
make sure nothing happens and everything's supposed to go off without a hitch. It's part of your job.
They want to walk on stage being just into music. They don't want to be thinking about anything other than music. So your job is to make sure their day is smooth sailing.
I can't even imagine. When you see people perform and all of the lyrics, I actually watched the about a week ago or whatever it was, the country music. I guess it was the country music TV awards or something. I don't know, fans awards or something, but Big Little Town performed, and they did this sort of remake of Phil Collins' Take Me Home. And it was phenomenal. And now that I'm listening to you talk about what goes into putting a show together on a stage and making sure the sound is where it needs to be, the instruments are ready to go. It was about 6 to 8 people in this band all singing their different parts, and the band playing, you know, their respective parts on the instruments. I think it's just a newfound respect, because I don't know if I ever thought about it before, all that goes into making that happen. People just put on a pretty outfit or something comfortable, whatever they feel good in, and show up at a concert and expect everything to be amazing.
Exactly. You know, we were talking about setting up. You know, you talk about somebody like Beyonce or Taylor Swift or even Metallica, you know, it takes sometimes up to a week to set their show up. And they have what they call a B-rig. Mm-hmm. So while they're playing, say, in Las Vegas, there's a whole nother crew already in the next city starting to set up the show for the next show, before the band even hits the stage at the other show. It can get really detailed. And you're talking about, you want things to move smoothly, because you're talking about millions of dollars on the line there. And you don't want any mishaps.
I never knew. I mean, I don't think I never knew that it would take that long. But I would look at the dynamics of a stage, and certain people have really phenomenal stage productions, especially with the residencies that we have here now. So as we move into the space we're in now with performances where you have the residencies, like I went and saw John Legend at the Zappos Theater over at Planet Hollywood, I want to say back in October or somewhere last year, somewhere recently. But it was such a production. I mean, he had all these changes, all of the stage stuff, the costumes, background singers, the musicians. I never thought about what it must really take to keep that going. And for people who do phenomenal, one-time performances that are very elaborate and extremely entertaining.
Well, yeah, you have to consider too, like a typical rehearsal before the tour even starts for Stevie and say Fleetwood Mac. We're talking, you know, anywhere from 4 to 7, 8 weeks of just rehearsal before we even hit the road. So, yeah, there's a lot of planning, flushing things out that could be a possible issue, whatever.
Wow.
And that's when, you know, my job, that's my job during rehearsal, is to fix anything that's broken or could break. It's never 100%, but if you do your job in rehearsal, fingers crossed, the shows go on like clockwork, and it's just, it makes your job a lot easier.
I have to tip my hat. What's the most, do you find people are different from one city to the next, though, in how they receive the band or receive you guys, different parts of the country? Do you just notice different things because you've done this for so long and you get to see the country through a different lens?
You know, quite frankly, in any city, the audience just shows up to see the artist. It's pretty normal everywhere. They want to see Stevie Nicks or Fleetwood Mac or whoever you're working with. And it's not really, you know, there's a lot of people that dress up in costume, if you will. But no, I don't really notice a huge difference from city to city. Just simply, I just noticed that they came to see the music and they're hoping for a good show. Fingers crossed.
Right. Because I think the most important thing to me for a show is sound. I've gone to shows sometimes where the sound is just, the acoustics are horrible, and certain venues are better than others. But sometimes I think you just feel like some places have amazing sound and it makes you want to go and see someone. Like I hands down, performed the theater at Planet Hollywood, I think is one of the most phenomenal venues here to see a show. And I love to go to live performances. So understanding and hearing what goes on behind the scenes is really quite fascinating. I mean, I've seen George Benson and Chaka Khan, Sting at Caesars, Phil Collins in his last tour, Stevie and Fleetwood.
Caesars is an excellent room.
That is a beautiful venue. The Coliseum is a beautiful, beautiful venue. Sound was amazing. We saw Sting during his residency. It was a phenomenal show. Phenomenal show. Phil Collins' last performance was great, too. And it was at T-Mobile Arena, but his son, Nick, did him proud on the drum solo in Air Tonight, so...
Yeah, I've been to T-Mobile a few times. That's a good sounding room. You know, another gig we were talking earlier, another gig that's obviously a classic, and they have all those pictures backstage that you were describing earlier of artists that had been there, is the Hollywood Bowl. I mean, that place is just
that
legendary.
That place is phenomenal. Yes. Would you say that's one of the most amazing places you've ever gone with her to perform?
One of the most beautiful nondescript rooms that I can think of is is it's in Chicago, and it's just a brick building. On the outside, you would never even know what's on the inside unless you walked in. And it's kind of has a Beacon Theater vibe. It's very Art Deco-y, and oh my gosh, it was just gorgeous. But if you were walking down the street, you would never know that that beautiful room was inside there. And it sounds great, and it's a small room as well, just like the Beacon.
I think
so many gigs.
It is. I think one of the coolest places I've ever actually seen a performance. Well, the Hollywood Bowl was definitely ranked at the top of my list. But we had the pleasure of seeing, I want to say it was John Legend, actually. I think it was him, perform at the Kennedy Center. In one of the theater rooms at the Kennedy Center in Washington. And that was, it was just such a treat to go to a performance held there. It was a private show for a conference that I was attending, a leadership conference, but it was a treat to see him perform in that space.
Yeah, I actually did the Kennedy Center a couple of times. One time we played a gig with Babyface there. But yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's kind of a room on its own. It's a special room, if you will, because a lot of, impressive shows go on there, whether they be, you know, conferences or seeing a group there, or there's like, there's just a bunch of what was his name? Michael Milken. He was doing a thing for his charity there. You know, they have a lot of those type of events there.
They
too,
do.
As
it's
well.
Just a powerful. I think the historical factor of being at the Kennedy Center and the grand, the grandness that comes with the idea and the iconicness of the venue is what makes it be one of the places that will always stand out in my mind as a great place
well
to
put.
See a show if you're ever able to do that. I have to ask you, what is your most interesting place? We named the Hollywood Bowl, and I have to agree with you on that because I had the pleasure of seeing Foreplay at the Hollywood Bowl. And it's amazing how the stadium seating goes up into the mountains and it's just open, almost like a coliseum, like back in ancient Roman times or something. And it just goes up into the mountains. And so the sky is your blanket, is your ceiling. You have the stars, you have the trees and everything that's around you. And then you have the sound and it comes out. It's lovely the way they've set that up. The seating isn't that comfortable because seats weren't that comfortable.
No.
Seats are not comfortable. I will give that. The seats are so uncomfortable, you need to bring a cushion. But it's absolutely worth the pain. I think it's worth the pain.
It's an old school gig. It's super old. I mean, the Beatles played there. It's ancient.
Mm-hmm.
They have done some updating, but still, the bottom line is it's an old gig.
It's nothing like it, though. I have to say, if you like having music surrounded by nature, there's nothing like that experience. How'd you end up staying here? Because a lot of times when we think of people in this industry, you think of California, and I know that we're right next door and things are shifting. And that's another conversation as we are beginning to see the efforts to bring film here as an industry, which means all types of new work will come into focus, I hope, for people here. And
rehearsed a lot at Sony Studios in Culver City. And yeah, if they could bring that same vibe here to Vegas, there's so many great jobs in that gig, whether it'd be, you know, I'm sure the office stuff is just as interesting, but my love at Sony Studios was the carpentry set design. It's just amazing the stuff that they put up in those stages for a TV show or bands rehearse there, and they got their gear all set up. It started out basically my wife and I grew up in Los Angeles, And then we spent some time in Oregon. And we've always been in a band. That's how I met my wife. I joined her band. And then she joined a show band in Las Vegas while we were still in Oregon. And she ended up talking me into moving down to Vegas. And I got to tell you, this town has been great for me. I've basically never applied for a job since I've been here. And I've been here for 27 years now. It's just been all word of mouth through the music business.
That's a phenomenal
story.
Your
reputation is everything in the music business.
It is. That's a phenomenal story. Very few people have the privilege of having a story, of having a life, of having a career that is based in the one thing, the very thing that you love, so adjacent to what you love the most, which is music. I know you've played with Stevie for a long time. Who's your is, and maybe she is your favorite, but who's in your top five rotation all the time?
Well, you are a tough host. That is, for me, growing up, you know, I grew up in the 60s, so I love so much music. I don't have a favorite, because it all depends, and you can probably vouch for this. It just depends on what kind of mood you're in.
I can.
I grew up with so many great bands back in the day, long before you were born, young lady.
Thank you for making me still. I appreciate it, especially so early. I like my youth to keep shining through.
It always does. I mean, back in the day, you could pretty much go to any club.
You got
to
pick one. You got to pick one, John. You're doing that diplomatic thing.
I like Larry Carlton. I like.
If I gave you a genre and I said classic American rock, who would you say?
Ooh, classic American rock. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many good bands, Tanya. It's hard to say. What band you really like? I mean, right now, my wife and I have been playing a lot of guitar of late, and we've been doing a lot of Joni Mitchell, Sean Colvin, Carla Bonoff,
okay,
Linda Ronstadt, Ricky Lee Jones. I mean, the list can just go on and on and on.
You probably could educate people, too, on what they're listening to. I think that's another fun thing about having the benefit of having a friend who understands the technical factors of music. I had another friend, and we're getting into the last couple of minutes of the show right now, but he played drums for Barry White and traveled with the Love Unlimited Orchestra for a while. And so we do concerts together, and he's always making me cognizant of sound and how well someone's falsetto is being performed and things like that, and whether or not the music is really good, because his ear is tuned very differently. And so I would imagine that you and your beautiful wife afford your friends the same benefit of teaching them through experiences at shows. Well,
yeah. I mean, you remember Lisa Fisher, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
She was singing background for Cher for a leg because she was off the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that woman, oh my gosh, she
just phenomenal.
Is so gifted. She is so gifted. And I'm telling you, she is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to say thank you, because we're really out of time. I want to thank you for spending some time with me this morning, for sharing your knowledge. I look forward to seeing you the rest of this week, because you are my neighbor. Thank you. Thank you, Las Vegas, for listening. To John Taggart, my man on the street segment, I hope you learned something new about music. And I'll see you next time here on The Scoop with Tanya Flanagan. Have a great week. Keep it here at 91.5 KUNV Jazz and More. I want to thank you for tuning into The Scoop with me, Tanya Flanagan. And I want to invite you to get social with me. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. My name is my handle, TanyaFlanagan. You can also find me on Instagram at Tanya Almond Eyes Flanagan. And if you have a thought, an opinion, or a suggestion, don't hesitate to shoot me an email to tanya.flanagan@unlv.edu. Thanks again for joining in. Stay safe and have a great week.